Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. I'm Rebecca Hewitt, the Executive Director of the SDC Foundation. Before we begin with our fantastic speaker for today, one quick housekeeping announcement. This is part of our summer series of panels here at SDCF, and the next one will be on August 17th. The fantastic, brilliant actress, choreographer, director, activist, Alexandria Wales will be with us moderating a panel with and about deaf theater artists. That's August 17th. You don't want to miss it. We have not opened up RSVPs for that one yet, but we will soon. So keep an eye out for that. Okay. I'm so thrilled to have with us today Jacquette Timmons. I first met Jacquette over 10 years ago when I was living in Austin, Texas. I took a workshop with her, and this might be old hat to you all, but at the time it was very new to me to connect my emotional life to my financial life. And that's what Jacquette does. And I was thinking about how to support the membership with financial advice right now, hers was the first name that came to mind. I'm really excited for us to have a chance to learn from her today. In terms of how the hour will go, Jacquette and I will talk a little bit, do a couple of question and answers ourselves, and then we'll open it up to questions from you all. To ask a question of Jacquette, go ahead and put that in the Q&A box. The chat box is not available, but the Q&A box is, so ask your questions there. Afterwards, Jacquette will walk us through a few exercises to get us thinking about how we spend and how we would like to spend our money. And at the very end, if we have time left, we're going to ask for one or two brave volunteers from you all to do some on-the-spot brainstorming. So if you think you might be comfortable with that, think about it and get ready to volunteer. Okay, is that right, Jacquette? Anything else that I should add to that lead-in? We're good?
Okay. We're good.
Okay. Everybody, welcome Jacquette Timmons. We could not be happier to have her here today. Thank you so much for being with us.
It is my delight. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so in terms of the questions you and I have been talking about this week, I wanted to start with the fact that, like I said, one of the reasons I really wanted you to speak with our community is because of your emphasis on how our emotions and mindset affect our finances. So right now, no surprise at all, the anxiety around when theaters will reopen is huge for our community. People have less income that needs to last longer. So what advice would you have for people who are managing that enormous emotional burden right now?
Well, first of all, I can totally understand. So let me just start from a place of I understand. The other thing that I really want people to kind of lean into is the reality that, yes, this is a, and I know the word is used a lot, but I think it's appropriately so. It's a hyper uncertain time, right? And because we've got the confluence of a healthcare pandemic, a pandemic of racism, an economic crisis, all happening at the same time. And so with all of that, it can make us forget the fact that we have had collective crises before. And not mm-hmm. only that, we have had crises in our individual lives, whether it was on the personal side or when it comes to managing the business of what it is that you do, right? Because as I understand it, most of you are freelancers. So your business is you. My point is, you have experienced moments of heightened uncertainty before. And so this is not new. And this is really an important time to kind of think about whatever got you through those uncertain moments in the past. What were the skill sets that you used? What were the resources that you used? Who are the people that you might have tapped into? Remember all of that and think about, are you maximizing them now? And if not, what can you do to do so? And if you need to add to your toolkit, what's that missing piece that's going to help you navigate it? So I think one of the most important things is to just remember that you're going to always make better choices if you are anchored in this may be the circumstances right now may be unfamiliar, but the bigger picture of how do I manage uncertainty, that's not unfamiliar to you. You've done it before. and you'll have to do it again in the future beyond just this moment. So remember that.
Yeah, that's great advice. And another thing our community is talking about a lot is the potential side hustles that they could build during the shutdown to supplement their income. We've all seen artists doing online classes, starting consulting businesses, corporate speaking, public training, corporate public speaking training. People are getting really creative, which is no surprise given who our community is. But in starting up that side hustle, there's pressure to do it well right from the outset. So thinking about your marketing, thinking about getting a website together, how would you advise people to build, like to find those, build in those startup funds to their budget when your budget's already stretched so thin?
This may sound completely counterintuitive, but I think the first thing you need to focus on is getting clients. So your priority ought to be, how can you get your first 3 to 5 paying clients for whatever the side hustle is that you are doing? And let the focus with regards to your website and marketing and all of that, let that come after you have the financial foundation and the footing from the client. Because right now, the focus should be cash flow and how do you get that money in? And the best way to do that, right, is to make sure that you are really utilizing strategically your network and utilizing that to get your clients. So let that be where you are prioritizing your time, your energy, your resources, mm-hmm. and whatever capacity those resources may be. And especially if it's going to require a financial outlay, you want to actually protect as much as of that as possible. So I'd say focus on getting clients at least 3 to 5 at a minimum, mm-hmm. ideally 10 if you can, before you even think about, do I need a website? Do I need to do, you know, marketing outside of what you might promote on social media for free?
Mm-hmm. That's really good advice too. I know that a lot of people are thinking about that right now. And SDCF is going to do some more panels about other kinds of alternate forms of work. But I think that's such good advice. I think there's so much pressure to have it perfect right out of the gate. And I feel like just you have to get it started and then see how, because you're going to get so much feedback, I think, once you get started, that if you try and make it perfect out the gate, it's not going to serve you, I think, in the long run.
Yeah, that's really true. And I also think that, you know, while the impetus for doing this right now may be predicated on the moment that we're in, mm-hmm. if you can give yourself the permission to kind of take a step back and zoom out, I think the other thing that will be really important in this moment is to think about, how does this side hustle make sense in the bigger scheme of things? So mm-hmm. what role is it going to play in your career when things get back to whatever they get back to and theaters are open, et cetera? You know, one of the things that I do when I'm working with my entrepreneurial and small business owner clients is I always remind them of two things: that every product and offer that they have has two jobs. One job is the job in the life of either the person with whom they're working, or if it's another business, that business, right? And that mm-hmm. job could look like, what are they helping someone to have, do, or be? And that can be packaged in terms of their challenges that you're helping them to address, the frustrations you're helping them to overcome, the goals that you're helping them to achieve, and similarly with their dreams. There's also a second job, though, that offer has. And that second job is, what is its role in your business? Yeah. And so as you're thinking about this side hustle, what is its role in your overall business? Is it just to get you through this? Is it to be the thing that you can count on throughout the rest of your career as the thing that helps you level out your cash flow, helps you to make sure that you are profitable? And even though I know, you know, most people are working as freelancers, I still want you to think about the fact that you are a business. And so as a business, mm-hmm. are you making these kinds of decisions that are having a positive impact, again, on your bottom line in terms of cash flow and profitability? Mm-hmm. And so when you're thinking about your side hustle, you may need to think about it right now in terms of, I need to generate cash flow now, but it all should also be with the consideration of what's the longer term impact of this decision that I'm making.
Yes. And I feel like that really ties into the next question I wanted to ask you. When we were talking earlier this week, you know, we were talking about the fact that one of the biggest things that you have in common with the arts community is your reliance on your, you know, you also rely on, have relied on live events as crucial to your business model. And for you and for the theater community, March 12th was a big day. For those of us in New York, that's when things really came to a halt. And when you and I were talking about planning this session, you shared with me some of the changes you've made to your business model that, like you were saying, might become more permanent changes. And I'd love for you to talk about that process for how you realized, how you dealt with that moment, and how you came to realize that some of these things actually might be for the benefit, your overall benefit, even after we open back up again.
Yeah. So thank you for recounting that part of our conversation. So when I said at the top that I really do understand because I was scheduled, you know, a huge part of my business is live events, whether they're events that I'm hosting, they don't compare to when I'm doing speaking engagements for corporations, for law firms, for conferences, both large and boutique. And on March 15th, I was scheduled to be leaving for a speaking engagement. And, you know, New York City had started the whole beginning process of shutdown mode. By that weekend, it was done. And on March 12th, the reason why it is so vividly clear to me is the state where I was traveling to, that governor shut them down. And so that's when it was like, oh, this is really, really real. And then as we all know, on March 15th, it was like 8 o'clock, all the restaurants are closing and everything that followed after that, right?
Go home.
So go home. Exactly. Stay at home orders fully in effect. So I know what that initial feeling was like of, oh my God, what am I going to do? Now, in my case, in the midst of feeling all of that, I have clients. So I reached out to all of my coaching clients to, you know, see how they were doing.
Yeah.
And in the process of doing that, I also, you know, offered for free initially some open Q&A sessions. And then I put together a curated conversation to help people navigate those initial, you know, weeks and days, if you will. But that was a paid experience. I'm sharing this because in the process of doing that, and this I think goes to the whole notion of business owners supporting other business owners. Someone reached out to me and they were like, look, I know the speaking arm of your business just took a huge hit. And then the other thing was they were supposed to be doing an event out of the country and they no longer could do that. So as they're retooling it, trying to figure out, well, what can we do virtually and how can we make it not as good as if you're in another country on a beach, but still valuable in some way, shape, or form. And she's like, I know, you know, some of my people talk about needing some help with pricing. So would you come and talk about pricing? I was like, absolutely. I gave her my number. She didn't push back on the number. She's like, that's your number. That's your number. I share all of that for a couple of reasons. Number one, that was a fellow business owner reaching out and saying, hey, so in your instance, are you taking advantage of those relationships? Are you reaching out to people? Are you open to people reaching out to you? So that's the A part of it. The B part of it is from that. Now, this person is a coach. They host masterminds. And from that, by the time we reach August, I will have presented inside 6 masterminds on something that I'm known for, which is talking about pricing.
Mm-hmm.
And I will have made not comparable in total, but I will have made a nice chunk of change so that it proved to me a couple of things. It proved to me, oh, wow, I can actually make, I'm not going to do as badly as I thought I was going to do on March 12th when things like, you know, kind of blew up because of this. So it opened up a new vertical that I am now fully pursuing. And what was accidental, I'm now thinking about how can I be more intentional about growing this and expanding this, not just for the rest of this year, but even beyond. And when I talked to you earlier about, you know, everything that you do in terms of your offers, having a role or a job in your business, Now I can give those corporate speaking engagements, when we do get back to live events, I can give those another function in my business, and I can replace perhaps what was there with this new vertical of doing these pricing workshops inside the masterminds of other coaches. Mm. That was not something that I even considered prior to March 12th. And I am so incredibly grateful for the fact that the opportunity was there. I was ready. I took advantage of it. And now I can stand before you and say a fear that I initially had from a financial standpoint and everything, it is not there for me any longer. So what I hope is that that story, A, lets you know what's possible, mm-hmm. but it also means that in addition to being flexible and open and resourceful and creative, that you've just got to not be so tied to what it looks like, because I was not tied to what the next thing looked like. I was just open, and that openness led to here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's how March 12th was for me.
Yeah. It's a lot of, I love that. And in part because, like we talked about earlier this week, I love that it was a fellow business owner reaching out to you and saying, here's what the boat we're all in. How can we help each other? I love that. I love it. So we have a little time for questions before we do the exercise Jacquette has in mind for us. We have some time for questions. So if there's anything that this piece of conversation brought up for you, questions you want to ask Jacquette, anything to clarify, please go ahead and shoot it in the chat, in the Q&A box, the Q&A box. And our brilliant program associate, Danny Catan, will be sharing your questions with us. Danny, do we have any questions yet?
We do.
Oh, good.
Just give me one moment here.
Sure.
Hi, everyone.
This is Danny.
So we have one question that says, a new side hustle is developing, but I'm feeling wildly underpaid for. $250 per script, hourly breakdown is not pretty. A new client has approached me for a similar product or service. I want to ask for $2,500 for a similar gig. Can I do this? And how do I do this?
So the first answer to the can, yes. in terms of how, I mean, it's going to sound really simple, but just ask for it. And here's the thing, when I say how and I say just ask for it, if you feel really firmly that $2,500 that you want to quote is the value of what it is that you are bringing to the table, say the number and then be quiet. Whether you're saying that number on a phone call or a Zoom call, once you say it, be quiet. You do not have to justify your number. That's mm-hmm. one of the things you need to remember. If you're in an email exchange, I would say, don't do that. Don't get into an email exchange about it. Either make your quote on email, and if there's, pushback or whatever, then get on the phone and have a conversation, because there's a lot of nuance that you can't pick up when you're having, that you can't see in an email exchange that you can pick up in the course of a conversation. So I hope that answers, I think that was Lindsay's question. I hope that answers the question for you. But can you do it? Absolutely. How do you do it? As simple as it is, and I know that it's not, just say it. But the key thing there is, once you say it, be quiet. Do not feel that you have to fill the air afterward, because you don't have to justify your price.
That's got to be nerve-wracking. Do you have any advice for preparing for that moment? I mean, if that's not what you're used to doing,
I would role play. Pick somebody you're really, really close to, and role play either one or maybe multiple scenarios with that person. And the thing that you really want to practice more than anything is taking a beat and being quiet after that $2,500. Because here's the thing, if I can just expand upon it, there are four main reasons that make pricing hard, but I'm just going to talk about two that might be pertinent for Lindsay. One reason that pricing is hard is because everyone asks the question, what should I charge for this, right? And it makes it seem, because it is a ubiquitous question. But think about it. If two airlines can leave from the same airport, fly into the same airport, depart and arrive around the same time, and yet charge very differently for their seats on their plane, well, there's every reason why you can charge differently from somebody else doing the same thing that you might functionally, that you might be bringing to the table, right? So that's one example from the standpoint of the question, what should I charge for this, is ubiquitous, but the answer to it is very, very unique. That's one. The second thing that I hear in your question is, so often we are taught to approach pricing as if it is purely a mathematical problem to be solved. And that's not true, because you as the person setting the price and the person as the one paying the price, everybody reacts to money emotionally, and that includes relating to pricing. So recognize that your price represents a heck of a lot more than just a number. So be clear about what emotions are coming up for you, those that you can address and control. Acknowledge that there may be some coming up for the person on the other end, but you're not responsible for them, but you do need to be aware of it. And a part of you being aware of it is knowing that that's plays a potential role in your negotiation, if you will. But again, I think the key is to role play and practice being quiet after you say that number. And if it helps, count in your head 10 seconds, because 10 seconds feels like a really long time in one of those scenarios.
Yes, but that's such good advice. Such good advice. Danny, what do we got next? Yeah. We've got a question about, given the uncertain times, what you suggest, Jacquette, about what to do with little savings. So how do you prioritize paying down credit card debt versus hanging on to cash, saving for a future purchase, that kind of triage?
So even under the most ideal situations, I am always going to be a both and person, mm-hmm. meaning I'm going to say save and pay what you can on your debt. And that may mean that it's going to take you longer to get out of debt, and it may mean that it may take you longer to hit your savings targets. But I would say do both. In a time like today, especially when there are, you know, so many unknown factors, again, not knowing when theater is going to open up again, not knowing whether or not there will be an extension with the $600 that I know some of you might be getting for unemployment. In this instance, I would say to prioritize hoarding, if you will, your cash, keeping that in your savings, and just paying the minimum on your credit cards. Like, you don't want to do anything that's going to jeopardize your credit and your credit score and your credit history. But at the same time, this is not the time to prioritize getting out of credit card debt over holding onto your cash or savings.
Yeah, that's really helpful too. We're getting some questions too about when do you know it's right to go out on your own? If you're going to have a side hustle, when do you know the right time to take that big, scary step of trying it out? Again, there's a question about someone who's been doing some financial consulting with another organization. What should she consider if she's thinking about leaving that group to go out on her own to start her own fundraising consulting business?
I think if nothing else, what COVID-19 has provided all of us is the reminder that we all need diversification when it comes to our income. If you own a business, you need diversification in terms of the audiences that you provide your products and service to. If you work as an employee and you know it's appropriate, I think it means you need to have a side hustle so that you are never financially vulnerable just simply based on a decision that somebody else chooses to make. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was writing my book, Financial Intimacy, and if you know anything about the traditional publishing route, it's a several year process.
At least. Oh my God.
At least, right? And so my book came out in 2009, which meant that it was due to the publisher in 2008. And I share all of that simply because as I was doing the research for my book, one of the stats that I came across was the trend that we see now unfolding in 2020 around the way in which we work. And one of the stats was something around the fact that, I'm going to get the exact numbers wrong, but the number of people that would be working in a freelance capacity, like we were moving more toward a freelance economy. And the fact that most people were staying in their jobs 4.4 years. Now, remember, I was doing the research and writing this to be submitted to the publisher by 2008. And here we are living out those stats. To me, what that proves is that everybody ought to have multiple streams of income. And so is the time right for you to do this? Absolutely. I think the thing is to be strategic about how you actually go about making those steps to do that.
A couple of things. One is that I have been following Chaquette on her online for a long time. So all of you, I see the chat kind of popping with, this is fantastic. And it is fantastic. So JaquetteTimmons.com, fantastic blog, fantastic podcast, great online classes. And that leads me to, I think we have time for one more question. And I want to just do this last question we have about, along with budgeting, Jaquette, any thoughts about how to think about continuing to give to charitable organizations? Probably a lot of us are thinking about political campaigns we want to be giving to right now, especially political organizing campaigns. I've benefited so much from your work about how thinking about how your money lives out your personal values. And I wonder if that's maybe connected to what this question here. So I think it might be a nice way to close out this before we go on to the exercise.
Well, actually, we will answer that in the exercise.
Oh, right. Well, that's perfect. That could not have been a better transition. So let's.
Yeah, totally. So, totally, great. Totally. I see a question from Ricky in terms of how did you get started in all of this? The short version, Ricky, is that I've been in the industry since 86. I saw the crash of 87 up close and personal, and that's what got me interested in the behavioral side, so the behavioral finance and economic side, because I saw people who lost so much money that day that literally if they could have jumped out of a window, they would have, and then yet there were other people that were really calm, and those two drastically different reactions, even though I was just a year out of undergrad and still green behind the ears, really just made me want to learn more about that. And I came to understand that that's the behavioral side. So that's why I do what I do in terms of getting people to focus on their behavior, their choices, the motivations behind it, and the emotions that drive all of it.
Amazing. Thank you. I'm going to turn my camera off and let you do the financial wheel, and then I'll come back. And
Okay.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right. So hopefully you have pen and paper nearby because this is an interactive exercise in that regard. So what I want you to do is on your piece of paper, draw a circle and have it take up as much space as you possibly can. And then you're going to divide the inside of the circle so that you have a vertical line and a horizontal line, and you are going to end up with two quadrants, two at the top and two at the bottom. And then once you have this, and I should say, by the way, that the exercise that we are doing is called the financial wheel. And I have been doing it with my coaching clients for 20 years, and I weave it into as many talking engagements as I possibly can. And you'll see why in a moment. All right, so now that you've got your circle drawn and you've got it divided, you're going to label the upper left-hand side earn, E-A-R-N, just in case I didn't enunciate earn. That's the upper left-hand quadrant. The upper right-hand quadrant is save. The lower right-hand quadrant is invest, and the lower left-hand quadrant is spend. So if you're looking at your financial wheel as though it's the face of a watch, you've got earn between 9 and 12, save between 12 and 3, invest between 3 and 6, and spend between 6 and 9. I'm going to ask you some questions in each of these quadrants. And there's something that I really, really need you to do, even though I know it may be hard to do. And that is, as you are going around answering the questions, which I'm not asking you to share here on this webinar, I do not want you to answer them based upon what's happening right now. I don't want you to answer them based upon your reality right now. I don't even want you to answer them based upon what you may have planned, or, you know, if you've adjusted your plans for the rest of this year. I want you to imagine that I have given you a magic wand. And with that magic wand, you can have these numbers be whatever you want them to be. Some of you will feel comfortable going 45 degrees from your reality, others of you 90, and some of you will feel comfortable going way out, a full 180. It does not matter. You do what's comfortable for you, but just don't have the number be based upon your reality. And it'll make sense. If it still feels a little nebulous, it'll make sense in just a moment. We're going to first start with save, and we're going to do a little bit of time traveling. So my first question to you here is, what do you want to save in 30 days? So, and if you have multiple savings accounts, just choose one account. How much more money do you want to see in that account 30 days from today? Not how much can you add to it, not how much do you have planned to add to it, but you can have this number be whatever you want. What do you want to see in that savings account 30 days from today? Time travel a little bit further out. A year from now, same account. What do you want to see in that account? And if you've always been taught you shouldn't have that much money, you shouldn't have that much liquidity and savings, that's true. But at the end of the day, before you can save it, before you can invest it, you have to save it. So you got to park it somewhere. What's that number that you want to see a year from now? And then let's travel even further. And I want you to think of the oldest person that you know. Maybe that person is in their 80s, in their 90s, maybe even 100. Imagine yourself at that age. Imagine yourself at that age and you are healthy and you're in a reflective moment and you're thinking back on your life. And it doesn't have to be the amount of money that's in your savings account at that time, but it's maybe the highest amount you've ever saved. Maybe it's the highest amount you ever saw in your savings account 1 month, 1 year, the average of your best 3 years, the average of your best 5 years. What's that number? So you should now have three numbers, one for 30 days, one for a year from now, and one when you reach the age of the oldest person that you know. As a homework assignment, what I want you to do is come back. And as you look at those numbers, explore why. What was the reason you chose those numbers? Because yes, I sprung this on you and you may not have been ready for it. And it feels a little crazy because I'm like, it's not steeped in reality. But those numbers mean something for you and to you. Otherwise, everybody on this call, I have no idea how many, everybody on this call would have the same number for each time period. And I know that's not the case. And even if some of you are within $10,000 or $100,000 or something of each other, your reasons for your numbers would be very different. So that takes care of save. Now we're going to move on to invest. And when we talk about investing, we are typically talking about building your financial wealth, right? And we're talking about making sure that you have more assets than the liabilities that you own. We're going to talk about financial wealth because you need that. Without that, you can't do the other dimensions. But I also think that it is important to also think about wealth in a more holistic and a much broader standpoint. So we're going to talk about financial wealth, social wealth, time wealth, physical wealth, and what I call emotional / well-being, spiritual well-being, if you will. But let's start first with financial wealth, because that is the thing that is the springboard for everything else that follows. At the end of the day, you've got three ways in which you can build wealth. You can own a business, you can invest in the stock market, or you can have income-producing real estate. For you, what's your pathway or your pathways to building wealth? Which of those three do you want to do? Do you only want to do one? Do you want to do a combination of two? If so, what is that combination? Or do you want to do all three? And then what's your number? What's the valuation of your business that will make you say you're wealthy? What's the valuation that you want to see in your investment portfolio that will make you say you are wealthy? And similarly for your real estate portfolio, what's that number? What I find is that oftentimes people are not very clear about the pathways they want to follow for building their wealth. And in addition, they don't have an idea of what their number is. And the problem is they're looking for certainty when it's more important to just have a number so you can know, well, what decisions do I need to make that's going to help me close the gap between where I am now and where I want to be? So if you're looking for certainty here, don't, but you do need to have a number. So that takes care of the financial wealth piece. The social wealth, this is where you are investing in others. And this, Rebecca, is going to the question that the person raised around, you know, how do I know what to give and how much and perhaps where? And for me, when I think about social investing, I'm looking at it as a two-pronged thing. There's social investing where you are investing in others in terms of people that you know, so family and close friends. And then there are people that you don't know, vis-a-vis your charitable contributions or your donations. And so if you were making a commitment to give a certain amount, what would that amount be? To whom? If you knew you were doing it for 5 years, and again, you're still waving that magic wand. So on the side where you're making charitable donations or maybe even political donations or giving to causes, who are those organizations? What's the amount that you're giving them? At least have one name written down, maybe two, maybe no more than three, just for the purposes of this assignment. And then when it comes to investing in people that you do know, who in your family would you love to be in a position to help financially without any worry about them paying you back? Is there someone in your family that's going to college and you know that if you underwrote their meal plan or their book expenses, that that would be tremendously helpful? Or maybe they need a laptop. That would be a one-time purchase, but you get my point. Or maybe there's someone in your life that has a chronic illness, and if you were able to help them with their prescription costs or some other aspect of their care, that would be tremendously helpful to them. So who in your life would you want to be able to financially support without any, you know, obligation to pay you back? And again, one person, maybe two, no more than three. And what amount of money would you want to give them each year if you knew you were doing it for 5 years? And the reason that I'm harping on 5 years is because 5 years represents a business cycle. So that's financial wealth and that's social wealth. Now we're going to talk about time wealth. And what I want to say is that I know with some of these, you probably would need more space and time to more fully answer them, but just do first thought, best thought. First thing that comes to mind, write it down. You can always come back as a homework assignment and sit with your answers and dive a little bit more deeply into them. But when it comes to time wealth, this is a situation where you could do whatever you want, when you want, how you want it with your time, because you got it like that. So what would you do differently? Like, what would be different about your day, your week, your month, your year, if you had the capacity to do whatever you wanted with your time? That's what time wealth looks like. And then when you think about all that is required to build up your financial wealth, to have the capacity to have the social wealth so that you can give without any reservation and any concern of whether or not it's going to put you in a financially vulnerable situation, in order to be in a position where you can maximize your time wealth, you need to be well physically and you need to be well emotionally and spiritually. So what are you doing to take care of your physical wealth, your physical being? And what are you doing to take care of your emotional well-being? Whether you think of that as emotional health, spiritual health, however you might define that. And I mentioned at the top when I gave you the instructions for drawing this, that I've been doing this with clients for 20 years. Let me just be really clear. I wasn't that advanced, right? When I started doing the financial wheel exercise, I focused, when it came to this invest portion, I focused on just the financial wealth and the social wealth. Those two have always been a part of the exercise and the experience. But within the last 7 years, I have really, really grown to understand and respect the fact that when it comes to wealth, we really do need to take, or we benefit anyway, from taking a much more holistic approach, which is why I have subsequently added the time wealth, the physical wealth, and the emotional / spiritual well-being component to it. So that's and savings, that's investing. Now we're going to move on to spending. And interestingly enough, I don't have a number here. I just want you to think about what would be different about your lifestyle if it could be whatever you wanted it to be. Would you still live where you currently live? The same house, the same apartment, the same city, the same state? I know for me, I probably would still live in the same neighborhood. I live in a brownstone in Brooklyn. I don't own it. So I think if money could be whatever I wanted to be and spend it, I'd do that. And then the other thing I would do is when we can travel again, I'd want to be in a position where I could charter a plane and not have to always deal with commercial stuff. That's my thing. But what's your thing? Like, what would be different about your lifestyle? And then what that does is it brings us full circle and it brings us to earn. And here, what I want you to do is I want you to actually to don two different hats. I want you to think about you as a business, right? You as a business. What do you want your business to earn this year? And of that, what are you paying yourself? You as a business, what do you want to earn in 5 years? Whether that's you doing what you do now, plus a side hustle or something else, what do you want your business enterprise to earn in 5 years? And of that, what are you paying yourself? And then we are going to revisit you one more time at the age of the oldest person that you know. And maybe you're not still working, but you know, hey, Betty White is in her 90s, well into her 90s. And as far as I know, she's still working. So you never know. But the point is, if you're still working at that time, it isn't hopefully completely because you want to, not because you have to. But again, this is an opportunity for you to have a reflective moment, think back on your career and be like, wow, I remember I did X. So what's that revenue number that would make you incredibly proud? Whether it was on 1 year's worth of revenue, the average of your best 3 years, the average of your best 5 years, what was the revenue that the business earned, and then what did you pay yourself? And now, Rebecca, let's have you come back on screen, because the question that I have for the audience are a couple of things. Before I ask the question, let me just say this. If you really stepped into my invitation to not have your answers be based upon what you can do or even have planned to do, there ought to be a significant gap between your current reality and what you've written down on your financial wheel. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's okay. Because your financial wheel is really your financial vision. And just like any vision, it's the vision that you have when you're doing your work, the vision that you have for your family, for the key relationships in your life. The reason it's a vision is because there's some aspect of the reality that's not there. And so you've got to get from here to there. And that's the purpose of the financial wheel. And that's why I was harping on not having your answers be based upon what you can do. But what I'm curious to know, and maybe you can put that in the Q&A box, did you notice the difference between the instructions that I gave you when we drew the financial wheel and then the sequence that we followed when we started going through the questions? I'm curious to see how many people noticed.
While we're waiting for responses, I find it so helpful to think about this in part because this is a time when we're reevaluating, I think, so much of what we're how we spend our time and how we spend our how we take advantage of our own resources and what resources we have in this moment. It's so smart. I think it's what we're all grappling with right now. And it's really helpful to think about that in terms of our financial lives. And I love the way that this exercise brings a certain amount of creativity to thinking about financial lives, because that I think has been really helpful for me, but also, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, you know, when you have the gap, if you're open to it, it really is an invitation to think through, that's a delivery, to think through, sorry guys, can't control that, to think through, you know, what do you need to do strategically different? What do you mm-hmm. need to do creatively? Where do you need to practice more discernment or more discipline? Where do you need to have more boundaries? And, you know, one of the things that I'm always reminding people is it does not matter the external circumstances, because we don't always have control over those. But what we can do is be really clear about the role that money has in our life mm-hmm. and recognize that money needs us to give it direction. And this mm-hmm. is one of the ways in which we do that.
Yeah.
So has anybody answered us yet?
Yeah, we got one woman, Susan tells us that she began feeling pretty confident, became less and less so as seeing how it would all come together by the end. And a couple, just one a question about repeating the question again for folks that may still be thinking through their wheel.
So my question was, did you notice the difference between the instructions that I gave you when we drew the financial wheel and the sequence of the questions? And so let me just answer that because I want to make sure we get through one more thing before we run out of time mm-hmm. and also answer the question about feeling less confident. So when we drew the financial wheel, in terms of labeling it, we started with earn. But when we started going through the questions, we started with save. And that was on purpose. That was not a mistake. And it was on purpose because many of us have been conditioned that the way that we approach money is we take what we earn, and from that we make decisions about how much are we going to save, how are we going to invest, how are we going to spend, and oh, by the way, we make all of those decisions after we've paid our bills, right? So it's like you make all of those decisions and you do that with what's left over. And mm-hmm. look, as a culture, we've been doing that for many, many generations, and some people are uber successful with it. So I'm not knocking it. I just call it by default, and I just happen to think there's a better way. And the better way is what I've walked you through with the financial wheel exercise, because that's putting you in a position of approaching your money by design and saying, these are the things that I want money to do for me. And then when you get to the earn part, it's flipping the question, because then you're asking yourself, what do I need to earn to make all of this happen? So as opposed to making what you earn work, you're flipping it. And I think that is a much more powerful space to be in. Mm-hmm. And even if you can't literally be in that space right now, just the notion of being able to think very differently, I think is profoundly useful and helpful.
It's a whole different mindset.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
totally.
I love it. I've done this a bunch of times now, and every time I get something different from it. I think it's a gift that keeps on giving if you have time.
That's what I've been told.
It's really good. Okay, we do have 10 minutes left. If anyone, Jarquette, do you still want to do a little bit of, get a volunteer to do a little bit of on the spot?
So I want to do two things. I want to do three things. So can you repeat the question that the person had with regards to feeling comfortable but feeling less so?
Oh, yeah. It was a question, a comment that she began, as we began the wheel, she began feeling confident and became less and less certain of how it would all come together by the end.
And that was probably because she was focused on the how and not just staying present to what it is that she wants. So I would suggest to, one, pay really good attention to which quadrant really became the tipping point for where she felt less confident. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing, those four quadrants, that's what any of us can do with our money, regardless of how much we earn, regardless of where we are on the wealth spectrums. Very broadly, we can earn it, save it, invest it, and spend it. And so if you're feeling more confident in one or two areas than you are with others, there's something to be explored there around what might be triggering the lack of confidence in one or two other areas. So I just wanted to make sure to point that out.
Yes.
So here was the other thing that I wanted to do, and it's related to this, and that is when you think about all of the different ways that you earn money. So I don't know if it's a matter of you work on several productions. Here's a better way to think about it. Pre-COVID, draw a circle, and that's your pre-COVID circle. what were the different ways that you generated money? And the reason why I'm suggesting making a circle is you might have to first, you know, list out what were the different ways, but then when you think about your income on a whole, as a whole, then divide that circle up so that it's a reflection of those different sources that contributed to your overall revenue pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. And then you want to do it now. And literally, even if it's zero right now, make note of that. And then your next one is going to be your ideal. This, at some point, this will be different. And it will be different in terms of things will be open. But when it is ideal, what does that look like for you? Because more than likely, we're not going back to where we were. So that's why I'm so hesitant to say when we get back to, because I don't know if that's going to look like what we are accustomed to. But when it's in whatever that situation is in the future, what's the ideal situation you want to be in? Like, I know right now some of us can feel so powerless, but this is really an opportunity to remember that even when you don't like the choices that are in front of you, there is always a choice that you can make. And when you are embracing that, that's where your agency comes in and that's when your power comes in. So those were that was the last piece of this that I wanted us to just kind of flesh out, because then the other thing that you can do is play around with that ideal, play around with that in light of what you've written down in your financial wheel.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. We also have a great comment from Lucy, just that the way you're talking about the earn section in the wheel, but how much do we want the business to earn and how much to pay ourselves is such an important reminder that your self-worth is unattached from your earnings and that you are not how much you earn. It's a business. And that's, I think, been really helpful. I'm sure not just for Lucy, but for a lot of folks on the call right now.
Yeah. I really, really dislike that conversation that's out there in the world that says charge what you're worth. And, you know, I know that perhaps this is my own baggage that I'm bringing to the table in that regard, because I am Black. My heritage is Jamaican American. So, you know, when you think about it from an ancestral standpoint, the fact that there's a price on one's humanity, it just, it's like, you know, fingernails on a chalkboard when people say that. I think the thing to always keep in mind that when you're charging, and even going back to the question at the top about the $2,500, what you are charging for is the value that you are bringing to the table. And again, I couch that in terms of what are you helping someone do, be, or have? And that's a simplistic way, but I think you get the point. And when you think about the value, that value is a concatenation of your education, both formal and informal, your experience, your perspective, your talents, your creativity, everything, right? And your ability to deliver whatever it is that you are delivering in the container that you are delivering it. And so that's what you are pricing. That's the value that someone is paying for. And that is what we need to be focused on. And that's why it's so important to recognize that your business is delivering that value and you as the individual is the vehicle. You're the vehicle for delivering it, but your business is the entity, if you will.
Fantastic. Yes. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Do we have time to do? We have 5 minutes. Should we do more questions if we need to, or do you want to try and get a volunteer to do a little bit of on the
whichever
spot?
You think would be whatever you think would be more beneficial? Either more questions or somebody wants to do a hot seat. You guys,
does anybody
decide?
Want to volunteer for a little hot, a last 5 minute hot seat? Be a brave soul and volunteer to join us on screen. Anybody? Anybody? Maybe not, which is also totally fine.
Yeah. Because we have more questions, right? If no one wants to do it.
Yeah, let me see what else came in. Got a question about, with this question about side hustles, what if you don't have one already going, then how do you find that side hustle? And we are going to have some more panels from SCCF about different like alternative career choices right for this moment. So we will be having, that's a long conversation. We'll be helping you with that a little bit too in a separate conversation. But Jacquette, is there any advice you would have for someone who's just thinking, I haven't done this before? Where would I even begin to start that side gig?
Yeah. So as you might imagine, even just with how we did the financial wheel, I think in pictures. And I think everybody should think in pictures. Yeah. And so I'm a huge advocate of mind maps. And mm-hmm. so for me, you know, just draw a circle. It's simple, but it's so profound. Just draw a circle. And inside of the circle is the question, what's my side hustle? And then mm-hmm. as ideas come to you, just write them down. And then at some point, something is going to pop up pop out at you as, that's what I should focus on. You might find that your side hustle is directly related to the work that you do, or you might find that it's something else. But mm-hmm. be in a space of curiosity to mm-hmm. figure it out. Don't force it. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. If we don't have any volunteers for the hot seat, can you talk to us about the questions you would have asked of someone in the hot seat? If we're not maybe going to do it on the spot, they can think about it themselves as they leave the conversation.
Yeah, I think, you know, the purpose of the hot seat is to just help someone brainstorm and think through what are the options that they might want to explore. So even mm-hmm. like this side hustle idea, that's a really great way. We wouldn't have completed it in the hot seat, but that's a really great way to get the creative juices flowing. And so mm-hmm. In terms of what people can do after this, I think one of the key things is if you are not already in community, I mean, I realize that this is a community, but if you're not already in community, talking to people if you don't have brainstorming partners is what I guess I'm really trying to say. Now is the really good time to start to cultivate those kinds of connections, not just colleagues in the business, but those that can help you brainstorm ideas around what you might want to explore. Because you also may discover in the process of doing that there's a potential to team up and do something together.
That's great. And I think really appropriate too for our community of collaborators and thinking about how we can explore all of these things together, not just the creative artistic work, but how we can explore these business models together too.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough, Jacquette. Like I said, jacquettetimmons.com, fantastic advice there to be found for all. We'll put this up on the website for members, and we'll also be coming to you with more panels later on in the summer about exploring this idea of alternative forms of work during the COVID shutdown. But Jacquette, it was so lovely to speak with you. I can't thank you enough for spending this time with us.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And you know, if there are any other questions that people have, if you want to shoot them to me, and if I can, what I'll do is create Absolutely. Like an audio response that you can share.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Really You're welcome.
Take care, everybody.
You too. Bye.
Talk soon. Bye.